All right, everybody, now we are on record. Hi, today is Tuesday, July 15th, 2008. I am Ali Rodriguez, business coach, strategist, and fashionista expert, helping small business owners succeed. My special guest, and I want to call him a guest star because he really shines, but I don't want him to get shy about it. My special guest today is Mr. Kenneth Duval. Ken is a retired business management specialist with over 45 years of experience working with Fortune 100 companies and other large companies and enterprises. If you're wondering what makes him so special, you know, I've known Ken for about 3 years working with a nonprofit here in Volusia County, and he managed to win in 2007, the United Way Volunteer of the Year Award in Volusia County in the state of Florida, which is just totally amazing. So for someone who's retired, I mean, he's doing big things in the world. And here we have the pleasure of having him today. So welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Allie.
Our agenda tells us, because we have so much to cover, and I've had this being asked by so many people. Henceforth, we're having this special select class today. People are really very much interested in learning project planning from its root. How do you develop it? What is the implementation process? And what are the expected results? So, as I said at the beginning of the class, we may not be able to cover all of the points that we have on our agenda, but at least to begin with, I would like you to share with our audience the very beginning. How do you set up a project? What do they need to be looking at?
Well, first of all, let me start off by making some general comments. First of all, I would like to thank you for inviting me to present this telecast seminar on project management, and thank all the participants who are in today's seminar. I hope they find this information helpful and informative. When you talk about the subject of project management, there are many tools out there that exist to help people do project management. There's even specific methodologies like the Stratus methodology, and there are many others that have been formed over many, many years of project management to help people understand just what project management is. There's also many professional organizations dealing with project management, such as the Project Management Institute, which is PMI, the American Management Association, AMA. There are thousands of books published on the subject. In addition, there are many specific project management courses that one can take at the university and college level, and also through various professional organizations. Also, continue to speak about tools, there are project management software systems, such as TimeWise. Microsoft basically offers Microsoft Project. You can use Excel, you can use Access. A company called Primera offers a system called SureTrack. Computer Associates offer a system called SuperProject. These are all methodologies, organizations, books, courses, and software systems all geared towards project management. It is a very, very large scope of management these days to get projects done. So for discussion purposes this afternoon, what I will be doing is using a drill-down approach and fill in with some of my own personal experiences to explain and solidify certain issues as we go through this process. I'd also like to mention about certain assumptions before we start. When we talk about project management, as you can kind of imagine the diverse population out there, you can really talk about projects that are very, very small, that involve perhaps only one or two people, and really only have a dollar value of, say, $25,000, $50,000, $75,000, or the super large projects that involves thousands and thousands of people and are up in the billions and billions of dollars. So to sort of put this in a framework, in a context that perhaps we can sort of all understand, what I'm going to try to do this afternoon is sort of put project management into a middle scope type of environment, in sort of a middle of the road type of project, and we'll give you sort of different views from different types of middle of the road projects. Another assumption is a reporting relationship. I'm making an assumption that we're doing a project and there is some form of reporting relationship to some executive level person or a cohesive executive group. In other words, someone other than someone involved in the project management team needs to be making the executive level decisions to guide and authorize the project to begin with. And that's either an executive level person or a group of cohesive executives. Let me just stop at this point in time. If you happen to be involved in reporting to some executive who is very wishy-washy about a project, are a group of executives where not all of the executives are on board with the project, you immediately have a problem. So you just sort of need to take that into consideration. Another assumption I would like to make before I start is that you're assuming that we're doing a project to either make something or improve or modify something. That's usually what a project is involved, and it can be either to improve an entire corporation, such as a re-engineering project, or it can be to make some sort of a product that we have to then get involved in marketing and sales, or et cetera, so on. There's just all sorts of projects and types of projects that the project management philosophy applies to. Another assumption is that you could be either doing this project either as part of an in-house employee group or as an external project. In other words, what I mean is someone has actually hired you and your expertise to do this for them. So I'm going to take those assumptions in mind as I proceed down through the seminar and address the project management.
Ken, if I may for a moment here, because if some folks have also asked me about the roots of creating a project in itself before it goes into the management end of it. If you can just briefly touch.
I'm going to get into that.
Okay, so I was ahead of myself. All right.
Yeah. The major phases of project management involves basically six phases. And what are the six phases? Well, the six phases are pre-planning, planning, project preparation, the actual building and modifying, implementing, and follow-up afterwards. Those are the real major phases of project management. Now, let me start in with the phase one, which is pre-planning, and go through some of the items that need to be taken into consideration. By the way, these items that I'm going to talk about are in no particular order because we haven't really identified any particular kind of project. The particular type of project will dictate the order that these things be addressed in. When you start a project in the pre-planning phase, the very first thing right up front, just initial, is basically what I would call the common sense approach. You really need to have some initial discussions to address the feasibility of the project, the need, the cost, and the timing. Let me give an example. If we happen to be doing a project that someone says we need to do, and we need to develop a new online system, an internet system, whereby people can buy and sell things online. The question is, what is the feasibility of that? We already have systems available to do that, eBay, Craigslist, any number of bartering type systems are already available on the internet. They have already gobbled up 90 to 95% of the share of that particular market. So one would initially question the feasibility of basically, does the world need another eBay? And that's sort of what I'm addressing there. Because in many cases, you don't want to get too far down in managing a project only to find out that it's basically worthless.
Right.
So it's a common sense approach right up front. The next thing that you would really need to take into consideration is to understand the basic project end result. It's sort of like hitting a target. And again, it depends on the project. But sometimes people start projects and they really do not understand what is the end result. That's very important. Sometimes projects have a tendency to go on and on and on because no one realized up front, when is the end? When does it end? The next thing that we need to take into consideration for pre-planning is basically the economics and the finance issues. We need to sort of, again, we're in the early stages here, we need to sort of get our arms around the fact is this, can we really cost justify this project? And we need to take into consideration things like administration systems, such as what kind of communications are we going to need for this project? I've been involved in projects where we've had to put in a whole telecommunications system. What kind of automation do we need? Again, I've been involved in projects where we had to basically create a whole data center. Those kinds of things can kill a project up front, and you need to make sure you understand what kind of administration systems are you going to be requiring to do the project. The next item is the people part. What kind of staff are you going to be looking at? You might need word processors, you might need receptionists, you might need administrative people, file clerks. What kind of workers are we going to need? Are we going to need construction workers? Are we going to need engineers? Are we going to need programmers? Again, it depends on the project. But we need to have some handle on what kind of people, what level of people, how many people, things of that nature. The next thing in the people part you might want to take into consideration is this issue of in-house versus external people. Sometimes you might be involved in a project where basically, if it's an in-house project, totally in-house, you're using all in-house personnel, which then poses the problem is, well, if I'm going to free up in-house personnel to do my project, then, well, who's going to do their work while they're working on my project? So then you have that problem to address. That's usually the case that drives projects to seek external personnel because they can't free up internal personnel. And by the way, that also applies to the project manager themselves. I personally have done many, many projects for very large corporations, not that they can't do it, not that they don't want to do it, not that they don't have the right people to do it, because they're very competent people. It's just that their people are busy doing other things. Then that leads me, again, to this issue of contract personnel. You may have to recruit various contract personnel to do some of the work on your project. So those are some of the key issues you need to take into consideration when you address the people issue here. Transportation costs. There may be transportation costs, there may not. Depends on the project. By transportation costs, I mean, for instance, some of the people you may have to fly in from other divisions, other factories, other plants, other job sites. Some of the contract personnel may be available only on the West Coast or something of that nature. There may be some transportation costs. Facilities cost is another issue you need to address from the financial standpoint. You may be doing this locally, you may be doing it in-house, and then again, you may not. You may, in this day and age with the communications and electronics and automation, you may be doing this from remote facilities, perhaps scattered throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. You also need to address the accessibility of the facilities. You may have a facility, and they say, oh, yeah, well, you can do it right over. You can go do this in, over at the factory or whatever, and then you find out that, well, yes, but the factory doesn't have room for the project, and we need to basically find another facility to duplicate what we're going to do at this factory before we replace the process in the current factory. So you might have facilities costs. If, for instance, a thought comes to my mind, we're building a local hospital here, and part of the construction process on that project is they have cleared a large chunk of land, and they have basically set up about 30 or 40 temporary storage trailers that act as a temporary warehouse for all the construction material that's being delivered to the job site. That's what I'm kind of talking about when I talk about facilities costs. Then you need to look at documentation costs. Again, depending on your project, you could have marketing costs. If we're going to build something that we're ultimately going to sell, then we could have a marketing cost we have to take into consideration, because now we have to perhaps develop the marketing costs to do that. We have project documentation costs. You could be involved in extensive blueprints, things of that nature. You may have training costs associated with documentation. Remember I mentioned up front you're going to build something. Hopefully you've got a good handle on what it is you're going to build, and eventually you're going to probably wind up maybe training some people on how to use this or how to avail themselves of a new building or things of that nature. There may be training costs associated with the documentation. There may be subcontractor costs. You may be managing a project where you and your project team simply cannot do all of it. You have to hire other subcontractors who have the expertise that your project team does not.
That's true.
There may be material cost. If you're building something, a product, a widget, for instance, there might be steel cost, plastic cost, lubricating cost, whatever. And again, I guess this is all project specific, but whatever the material cost is, if any, you need to take that into consideration. Another area that deals with the financial issues is legal. You could have contract expenses, change orders. This is a big thing. You're going to hear me talking about more of this later on. You could have bonus payments, whether you're either an internal employee or an external employee. Sometimes bonus payments pay a big point of contention with project management. Schedules. You could have legal costs involved in schedules. If your project does not meet a schedule that's agreed upon in, say, a contract, you could have potential quite a bit of legal costs because you did not meet the schedule. You may impact other areas of a business because your project didn't meet its schedule. There could be various phases involved in meeting costs, such as status reviews, management reviews, and milestones. When you sit down and you talk about the pre-planning, again, we're still just on pre-planning. When you start to talk about what is it going to cost me to do this project, one of the things involves all the different meeting costs. Are we going to do phase meetings, status reviews, management reviews, milestone reviews? All of these meetings are very costly because you're tying up usually chunks of people for periods of time that all has to be accounted for. The other issue is just what I call miscellaneous costs, because I'm sure depending on the particular projects that you get involved in, the cost and what I have mentioned so far just covers sort of the basics, the highlights of everything. There's a lot of miscellaneous costs that sort of are various project specific. The next point that I need to mention in the costing here is a cost justification are critical. At this point in time, you should have a pretty good handle on the cost of what of doing this project, of what it's going to cost. And then that gets back to the thing I mentioned right up front about the common sense and the feasibility. Once you've been through this level of pre-planning, you need to say, okay, let's just stop and you know, do our total cost here, the total cost estimate at this stage. And does this even make sense to even do this project? Because is the payback going to be, you know, greater than the cost, and et cetera, so on. At this stage of the pre-planning, it may or may not be. And of course, the next thing you want to do is to develop that preliminary cost estimate. So you've actually got something a little semi-formal that you can actually sit down and talk to somebody intelligently and say, well, this is what I think it's going to cost to do this project. So now we sort of identified our pre-planning cost issues. The next thing is the operational agreements. For instance, the organization, you want to go up and down the chain of an organization. Let's assuming that we're an employee of a company, and the vice president or someone comes to us and says, we would like for you to do this project. One of the things you want to do up front in the pre-planning stage is to actually go up and down the chain of command to see the feasibility of doing this project. Does everybody agree that there, first of all, there is a problem, and we do need to solve the problem, and that this project, when it's all said and done, will result in an improvement or change something in the corporation? And the reason I say that is right up front, if you're involved in a project where someone at the executive level has said, hey, we want you to do this project, and you get all excited about doing the project, but the rest of the company isn't behind it, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm bringing this point up in the pre-planning stage, because it's very important. Assuming this is not some secretive type project or something of that nature, it's very important that you have, you know, the blessings of various people up and down the chain. And I can't tell you how many times I've done projects where that has been sort of a critical issue. The next thing from an organizational agreement standpoint that you need to address is, do we have any additional problems involved in doing this project, such as insurance? Is this going to cause our corporation any kind of insurance problems? Do we have any problems with governments? For instance, if someone wants me to build a condo, for instance, oh, wait a minute, I've got government problems now. I've got county problems, local problems, city problems, all sorts of problems I need to address in terms of you know, getting an organization up and running to do this project. Do I have subcontractors? Again, some of the projects can be very, very unique, that there's only perhaps a few subcontractors capable of doing this particular type of work for me. And the same thing applies with vendors. Again, it depends on the project, but I need to make sure right up front in pre-planning stages that I have addressed all of these issues. I've got the organization behind me. I've covered any insurance problems I have. I've covered any government problems I may have. I make sure that I've got subcontractors available in case I need them, and make sure that I've got my vendors identified that can supply me the materials that I need to do the job. The next thing that we want to take into consideration is, I guess, what I would call address the scope creep. And what that involves is change orders. Because right up front, I will guarantee that if you start any type of a project of any medium size or anything of that nature, there will be changes along the way. Things will happen, things will change, things will pop up that you had not thought about, subcontractors will go out of business, et cetera, so on. And you need to make sure that you have a good change order system in place and everyone is in agreement on how that change order system is to work. And I'm not so sure everyone understands the change order, so let me just take a minute of time here and sort of go a little deeper into that. If you have a situation where you're involved in doing a project that everyone has agreed upon and everyone's signed off on, and all of a sudden we decide that let's just say we're building a house, because everybody can relate to that, and all of a sudden as the structure goes up and you see the window frames going in and now the windows are in, and now all of a sudden you say, oh wait a minute, that, you know, those windows are too small over here, we need to put bigger windows in there and they need to be taller and blah 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 blah. Well, now we've got a change order, because it's not only we not only need to change those windows, but we need to change the opening in the wall so that the windows can fit in, because we say we want bigger windows. So you not only have the expense of the labor and the material of the windows, but now you've got some time problems. It's going to take you longer to build the house. You're going to have to do some demolition labor, and this is all going to be fairly expensive. All of that needs to be identified, dated, signed, agreed upon, and a whole bunch of documentation needs to be changed, such as blueprints, et cetera, so on. So that's what I mean by a change order. And I hope you can imagine, if you're doing any sort of a major project or a medium-sized project, as I identified earlier, change orders can be just totally devastating to a project. Mm-hmm. And they need to be documented properly and fully ready to prove why you changed what you changed and when and how much. Because at the end of the job, at the end of the project, this will become very, very important.
This you're still considering, in other words, you're saying all of this needs to be taken into consideration during the preliminary, the pre-planning phase.
Yes, and let me, that's a good question. Yeah. And I want to do that up front,
yes,
because I want whoever is working with me in terms of any subcontractors, vendors, or specifically the person that I'm reporting to who is the executive promoting this project or the company, I want to make sure that they understand there will be change orders. This is the change order system to be used. And I want to make sure that everybody understands, for instance, once we start the project, don't come to me and say, well, look, just change those windows over there. Yeah, no. We don't do that. That all gets documented. See, because later on when I said I was going to build that house for you in 7 months and now it's taking 10 months, I want you to understand why. And I want everybody to know up front. See, because if I don't have everybody understanding about change orders up front, I'm not so sure I'm going to do the project.
Exactly. You're totally right. Yeah.
See, because I've been through this so many times, I know the problems when you do not have change orders. But change orders is sort of a run-of-the-mill in terms of, you know, project management. And most people who have been involved in project management fully understand change orders and the ramifications of having them and not having them. The next item in pre-planning is to define the goals and objectives. We may have projects where we have basically multiple goals and multiple objectives, or primary goals and sub-goals. This is very important to understand just really what our target is. It may be to build something to improve our profitability. That may be, you know, the goal is to build something, the objective is to improve the profitability. And then you can drill down even more and say, well, how many things are we going to build, and how profitable do we intend to be as a result of this project? So you can take this down into even deeper levels. For instance, and this is upfront in pre-planning, because if you say, well, look, I can build you a better widget, and it's a bigger widget, and it can be improve your profitability by 3%, up here in the pre-planning, you as the executive say, not enough. I 3% is just not enough. I can't afford the cost of even doing the project if I'm only going to get a 3% increase out of it. So that's why it's sort of important to understand where we're going up front in pre-planning, because some of these issues are really meant to discourage the project even from beginning, so you don't get involved in a bad project up front.
Yeah, that actually, I mean, it could be pandemonium, and a lot of people could get hurt with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and especially in the smaller businesses, you cannot not afford too many of these bad projects.
To be sure. I'm sorry, Ken, I'd like to find out from the audience, perhaps this could be a good time if they have any questions. Ken, are you okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, audience, are there any one of you who would like to ask Ken a question at this time? Don't be shy. You can go ahead, raise your hand, give me your first name. If not, we'll just continue. However, we'd love to hear from you. I can't believe I have a shy audience. All right, Ken, let's move on then.
Okay, the next item is to address any partnership type requirements that you may have. And again, sometimes you may be involved in a project where other people, other companies want to get involved in the same type of project, and they're willing to share with you and partner with you to obtain the end results. So they are willing to share either resources, people, costs, systems, expertise, et cetera, so on. That could be, especially for the smaller companies, a good way to minimize the cost if it's something that you're willing to share with someone else, specifically another company or another organization. Mm-hmm. Could be partnership arrangements. Another thing to look into is the use of best practice scenarios. That's if available. And for the large companies, they do that. For the smaller companies, that's not just too prevalent. But that is something that needs to be kind of taken into consideration, again, when you're doing the pre-planning for a project. The documentation issue, we need to make sure that we have an agreement as to what's needed to document. And we need to agree upon the documentation technology. By that, what I mean is when the project is done and you produce this documentation, specifically like training materials that we have already talked about, you want to make sure that the documentation technology that you've turned over to the company is something that they can use in the future to modify such like training materials and things of that nature. You don't want to turn over something to a company and they say, well, gee, this is great, but you know, we don't have that technology and we can't use it. So that's an issue.
That's a very good issue. I don't know how many of us actually think of that.
Yeah, and especially, and this is, as I mentioned before, and I'll continue, this is all sort of specifically project-driven. If you're in the process of manufacturing a new consumer electric shaver, for instance, mm-hmm. and you want to prepare the documentation on how to use the shaver, how to repair the shaver, how to maintain the shaver, and you prepare a document that addresses all of those issues, and you give it to the company, and then, you know, you want to make sure that they can continue with it, they can modify it, they can print it, they can store it, they can, you know, that it matches their technology. Another thing that we need to take into consideration up front is what kind of education requirements we may be requiring on this project. in terms of turning over the final result to whoever we're going to turn over to. This could be just to turn it over to a few clerical people in the office, or it could be turning it over to a plant manager to implement his manufacturing personnel. It could be just anything. And that requires perhaps marketing. You can do internal marketing, external marketing. The whole marketing thing needs to be addressed if you're actually building something that, of course, is going to be either resold or utilized heavily internally. It may be developing a manufacturing system that's going to be developed through 30 plants nationwide and requires basically a lot of internal marketing. Address international issues. And I realize some of the small companies perhaps do not have these issues, but there could be language problems, currency problems, social and work issues. Some countries slack off in the afternoon. Some companies have very relaxed work schedules, things of that nature. Sometimes that does involve project management and how you set up a project. I myself have done several projects internationally, and those issues really needed to be addressed because it can affect the project. And address security issues. That's another thing right up front. If we're doing some pre-planning, we're going to do a project, and we're going to have to get into a factory to do this project. The question is, can we even get in the factory? Is there security that allows us, or do I have to do this project outside the factory and then turn it over to somebody else to implement in the factory? It could be security issues. Even with the small companies, because more and more of the small companies are getting the government secured jobs. For instance, I know of one very, very small company. They are in the facilities maintenance area, and basically what they do is they clean offices. Well, guess what? They just received a NASA contract to clean the NASA offices. They're going to have to develop a little project on how they're going to do that. How many people, when are they going to do it? What are they going to do? What are the sign-offs? What are the change notices? Are they going to have to hire some subcontractors to do, for instance, a trash haul away, things of that nature? Mm-hmm. Is security going to be an issue?
Yep.
You bet.
Yep.
So there we are. Now, that pretty much concludes the discussion items for pre-planning. If you just kind of do a quick review, we've taken care of our common sense. We've looked at all the basic finance issues. We've looked at the operational agreements. We've addressed the change order issue. We've defined goals and objectives. We've looked at any partnership requirements, maybe a best practice scenario. We've got an understanding about our documentation, our education, any currency, international security issues. At that point in time, I think, assuming we've sort of feel good and comfortable about where we're at and that this project is a viable project, then it would be time to move into the planning stage. And if you like, I'll just continue going.
Yes, I like. Once again, I want to ask the audience, because I have not bothered to unmute or to actually mute this line, unless some of our audience have muted themselves. If you have any question of Ken, I mean, he's on fire, so now it's the time to ask the question. I was particularly fascinated by the change order, because that seems to be something that we get so excited with getting something going, and our own passion gets in our own way. And you have hit on a couple of things in here that are really crucial to the success or even the viability of a project in itself. So, audience, if any one of you have any questions, Kathleen, are you still with us? Hi. Just go ahead and ask your question. This is the time to ask Ken the question, because now we're going to move into the planning stage of it. Okay, let's just move on then, Ken.
Okay. In the planning stage, basically we need to do a little bit more drill down in the administration systems, communications, telephones. Teleconferencing is sometimes big on a project. That requires some technical expertise to set that up. And I'm talking about video conferencing, things of that nature. Addressing, again, the meetings, status reviews, management reviews, milestones. Management systems. This is sometimes a big issue, and we're into the final planning now. Automated systems. I had mentioned earlier about project management systems. You really need to define at this stage what kind of project management system is best for this particular project. And you need to address, you know, the size, the scope. Some project management, you need very strong financial accounting and reporting systems and things of that nature. You need to pretty much firm up on what kind of project management software we're going to use. You need to pretty much address what kind of accounting systems. You know, you need the ability to do billing, receivable, payable, project accounting, cost capturing, things of that nature. Now, that's assuming that if you're doing this as an internal project, your own internal corporate accounting department either may be able to do this or may not be able to do this. Sometimes the accountants basically say, gee, I don't want to get fooled. I don't want to get wrapped up in this kind of thing, and it's not our normal business, and et cetera, so on, and their software is not really advanced enough to take care of project accounting. You need to address capability issues, internet uses. Again, I'm talking about the internet and intranets. Again, determining the size of the project and the size of the company that you're dealing with could be issues with databases, security, networks, things of that nature all need to be firmed up at this particular point in time. Back to the intranet issue, just to bring a few things onto the table. You know, sometimes more and more, when you deal involved with the larger projects and the subcontractors and the vendors, it's very productive for project teams to interface with subcontractor and vendor intranet systems. Mm-hmm. It's very timely, very productive to do that. However, there is a small cost and some time and expertise required to do that. At this point in time, the next major thing you want to do is to develop a project org chart. So now you should know exactly what kind of people you're going to have, what kind of vendors, what kind of subcontractors, if any, and where they all fit and where your staff fits. And so now you should be able to put together a reasonable org chart. And you need to continue to address the people issues such as scheduling, cost, communication, programmers, accountants, finance people, engineers, sales, marketing, all of these kind of people. You need to pretty much have an idea of exactly who, and I mean specifically now names of people, where they're coming from, whether they're academic professors, manufacturing, graphics people, names, where they're coming from, and their cost. Same with subcontractors, same with any in-house personnel involvement. Let me mention one of the big problems you have with using in-house personnel on projects is the availability of these people. Because usually, like in pre-planning and even in this planning stage, different companies will say, oh, yeah, well, we can save cost and you can use, Sally and Billy and Joe. And that's fine, but 3 months from now when I need to use Sally, Billy, and Joe, they're on vacation, they're in training, they're busy doing another project, or they left the company. So those are some of the problems that you face in using in-house personnel. And there's also the same issue with the vendor. Another thing that you need to address here in the rental, in the planning stage, is rentals. Now remember, we're trying to actually nail this project down now so we can actually get started here. You may have vehicle rentals. You may be renting cars, trucks, any number of types of vehicles. Equipment rentals. If you're involved in construction, you might be renting scaffolding, signage, computers, facilities. You may have to lease or rent. I've been involved in projects where I've had to lease separate facilities, warehouses, hotel rooms.
Oh, dear, of course.
If, if you're bringing in subcontractors or things of that nature or contract people, you may have to provide hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Again, depending on the project and the size and what have you. Materials. If we're building something, we're going to have a raw material. What are we talking about? I need to have that nailed down now. I need to know exactly where my materials are coming from and how much they're going to cost. And if my schedule, if I'm involved in building something out of steel, and if I have a steel lead time of 6 months, my project schedule better take that into consideration. So there's a lot to be discussed about raw materials. Consider the development of training materials. We've sort of talked about that. We need to address the turnover process. One of the things is, okay, we're going to get this all ready to go, and we're going to build this, and then the next thing is, okay, what are we going to do when we get it built? So there needs to be some sort of a turnover process. And again, that can be a matter of a few days. That can be a few months. Or it could be even longer. You need to develop the implementation process, if any. Whatever it is we're doing, whatever it is we're building, assuming we're building something that may be used to improve the process of a corporation, something of that nature, how are we going to implement this? Are we going to do this all at one time? It may be something new that they may not even have, so we can just drop this in and do this from now on. Or is this something that we're going to be replacing, which means we need to be doing this in phases. Those phases could involve labor, time, schedules, could be months and months. Address the administration type responsibility issues. This gets back into building access. Am I going to have parking spaces? Can I get to them? How many? Security. Am I going to have a workspace for my project team? Am I going to have access to the telephones, telecommunications, copiers, meeting rooms? I've been involved in projects where I've had 3 or 4 or 5 dedicated meeting rooms for my project.
Oh.
That all of this needs to be worked out up in the planning stages here, because it all has cost to the project.
Mm-hmm.
Define the scope of the work. This needs to be actually written documentation specifically dealing and answering the question, what is it that we're really going to do on this project? As I said before, we're either going to build something or we're going to modify something. Build in the flexibility into this scope of the work. You may think you can build this house in 8 months, but depending on the house, it may take you a year or a year and a half. So you need to build some flexibility. Murphy's Law. If something's going to go wrong, it will. Build in quality control. Whatever it is we're doing on the project, there needs to be some form of quality control. And you want to address that in the planning stages here. If we're going to build something like construction, we need to talk about building in the schedule things like inspectors, addressing building codes. If we're going to build a manufacturing type thing, we have quality control things such as the ISO system, our TQM, our some companies have their own form of quality control. That needs to be embedded in our project. Address any miscellaneous items that are unique to this project. Develop a project plan. This is the stage where you actually want to start a plan, a schedule, a sub-plan. You might have architects involved. You need to account for vacations, sick time, turnover, weekends, holiday. You can't expect the project team to work 24/7. Meetings, priorities need to take into consideration. Phase linking or simultaneous phases need to be taken into consideration. Testing efforts. As you go down through the project, there may be various stages, various phases that need to be tested. Define the deliverables, documentation, training. Address the implementation, as we talked about before. All at once or phased. This will affect your project plan. Develop a refined cost estimate. Now remember, we've already, up in pre-planning, we've already done a preliminary cost estimate, but now we've drilled down a little deeper into our cost, our administration cost, our management systems, our people issues. We have an org chart. We now have people assigned to positions on the project team. And so now we can go ahead and refine our cost estimate as to what it looks like at this stage of the project. Develop a contract or a management agreement. Even if you're internal, even if you're working as a company employee and your boss says, I want you to do this project, you should have some formal document. It doesn't need to be a contract, but it needs to be some form of agreement where you have signed on to do this project as you understand it with these parameters to develop this particular deliverable, and you have someone in the corporation who is an executive level person that has actually signed that you are to do this work. And that's really a part of protecting yourself, protecting the corporation, as to why are you even doing this to begin with. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get yourself in a position where you're perhaps in a small company and your boss says, well, why don't you do this and, you know, develop this project, and you're off doing this project, and then all of a sudden your boss, he quits. And he's either replaced or not replaced, and the man above or the person above him comes to you, you know, you're halfway through your project, and he says, what in the hell are you doing this for? This is a waste of time. You don't have anything to go by. You're out on a limb. You know what I mean?
Well, yes.
And so you really need something in the form of an agreement. Now, if you're external to the corporation, of course, now you're talking about a management agreement and a contract that's clearly spelled out. You need to present the plan to executive management, discuss and review it, make sure you have the correct executive. Again, this sometimes happens where some vice president or somebody has got somebody doing some sort of a project that's sort of a pet project, and all of a sudden that pet project turns into a disaster, and you need to make sure that the right executive has authorized the project to begin with. Then you need to sort of review the current phase and preparation of our next phase. So in review of our planning, we further have defined our cost, our management systems, we have a project organization chart. We've pretty much have got our people issue worked out. We know who it is, when it is, how much they are, when they can start. We've got schedules, subcontractors, vendors. We've addressed any rental issues we may need, more raw materials, training materials, implementation costs, whether we're doing it all at one time or phases. We've defined the scope of work so we know exactly what we're doing. We've addressed any miscellaneous items. We've got a project plan and a schedule documented here. We've refined our cost, and now we're ready to sign an agreement. So at this point in time is when you want someone to sign that agreement that says, we in fact are going to do this project. We know what it is we're going to deliver. We know what the schedule is. We know what the costs are, et cetera, et cetera, so on. This is a major point in the project right here. At this point in time, I'll stop if you've got any questions, or continue.
You're being so clear as far as I'm concerned. Once again, if those of you on the line, if you haven't been able to get through, perhaps hit star 6 to unmute yourself, give it a try, because you all, I know that they're taking notes like crazy. They have been really quiet. That tells me that they're taking notes, even though they're going to get an audio link to this recording. One of the things that I didn't even think of when you were talking about addressing the turnover process, some of the things that you have to have access to, like there has to be a building access, the parking spaces, the copiers, the meeting rooms, all those kind of things. You're being so specific with all of the things that really go into the prepping and then the planning in itself, that this has been actually mind-blowing for me.
Well, I do have been involved in numerous projects for companies where when you sit down and address this issue with them, they say, wait a minute, you know, you're right. We're jammed out of space right now. I mean, we don't even have enough space for our own people, much less a project team. And then you start entertaining the thought of, well, now does that mean I need to lease office space off-site somewhere? And, you know, there we go. And so then we wind up leasing a space either in the neighborhood or somewhere else. Sometimes it doesn't even have to be in the city. I mean, it can be somewhere else. And, of course, that all needs to be taken into consideration. Somebody needs to do it, and there's a cost and a time involved in all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, what would be, we're about, we have about 15 minutes left, Ken. What would be the next thing you'd be getting into?
The actual project preparation. Once we've signed the contract, the next phase is project preparation. So we need to start putting it in place.
Okay. Well, like I said at the beginning, because I really want to get in for the benefit of all of us as much as we can during this call, and then part two of this call will take place next Tuesday, July 22nd, 2008 at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So let's go ahead. Let's continue. This is exciting.
All right. In the project preparation phase, remember we have just completed a major milestone in our project management, and that is we have actually got management to sign a document that says, go ahead. So we are now going to go ahead. Now what we need to do is to put our tools in place to do this job. We need to actually implement the administration and management systems. And remember, I had mentioned that this could involve different facilities. That means you actually have to start leasing the facilities. It could involve in management systems that could be involved in any number of automated things, project management software, accounting software. You need to start maybe getting people involved in the internets, databases. I mean, actually physically starting to do preliminary work to put communication systems in place so the project team can actually communicate with the company or et cetera, et cetera. Whatever it is, it depends on the project, of course. If you're doing this internally, for instance, in a small company, management systems, computers. Most small companies have computers. Let's address small company issues here. If I'm going to do a project in a small company, and if I'm going to come in assuming that I don't have my own computer and I need two or three computers internally, then the question is, do you have two or three extra computers for me? You may or may not, which means I then may have to go either lease computers, depending on the length of the project, or purchase computers. And then somebody needs to get them up and running and installed. They may have to be installed on a network inside the company. This all takes time, but we need to do this. We actively need to get that done. Lock in transportation and facility requirements. Again, we kind of talked about that. I want my parking spaces assigned tomorrow. Is there a problem with that? You know, I need that, like, now.
Now, yep.
Because we are now starting our project.
Yep, now we're ready to go. Yep.
And is there security codes to get in the building? Oh, okay. I need those tomorrow morning.
Yep.
Address material needs. Do I need to buy anything? My steel, for instance. That's when I'm going to start buying my steel, after I've got my signed contract.
Right.
Manufacturing equipment, raw materials. Anything that I need to get on order, I need to get that on order, and I need to start going on the project. I need to address the people availability. I need to actually hire subcontractors, call my subcontractor, and say, hey, you said you could provide, two people or 20 people or whatever starting on such and such a date. I'm expecting them to be here tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yep.
Et cetera, et cetera, so on. My support personnel could be a timing issue. My internal people. You told me I could have 6 of your manufacturing engineers. Now they're ready to start Monday, right?
Yeah.
These kind of things, it all gets into the preparation to actually start the team. I'm forming the project team, and I'm starting to do what I need to do from a scheduling, a timing standpoint to make things happen. That's really what the project preparation phase is all about, actually getting people to sign up, show up, facilities, et cetera, set up, place to sit. I'm going to get some mail. I expect that mail to be delivered tomorrow morning to my mail stop at such and such a location. All of those things is what needs to be worked out. The next phase is actually building and modifying. And I put the term building and modifying because it's such a generic term and it depends so much on the type of project that we're doing here, whether we're actually building a condo or building some kind of a system or modifying business processes, things of that nature. It's very, very dependent on the type of system that we're managing here. But now we've got things like in-house personnel involvement. I encourage involvement from the entire organization, if possible. Work out any scheduling problems, because everybody says, well, yeah, I'll come over and I'll talk to you about this new system, but I can't do it for the next week and a half because, you know, well, then that gets back to the executive that you're working with and how fast he wants this system implemented, because in many, many cases, the projects that I have worked on have been classified with a corporation as a critical project. And the executives involved in it understand all of that. And if I say I need 3 engineers for a meeting Monday to pick their brain, I will guarantee they will be there Monday. And it will not determine on what the engineer says he needs to be doing. His boss will tell him. That is the most important thing for him to do Monday morning, is attend that meeting. So anyway, and then we start in on back on our change orders, because now we're actually making something, modifying something, and actually working weeks and months into our project. I've got here any changes to the original plan, deliverables, or schedules are properly requested. That's a key word, properly requested, because many times, for instance, using my example, we're building something, I'm using engineers, my 3 engineers have come, one of the engineers has said, well, you know, really, you need to do this way, and we need to have it interfaced this way, and it needs to be painted blue instead of red. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a change order here.
Right.
And some engineer has said we need to change this. The question is he authorized to make change orders? Maybe not. And so you need to make very sure that you get the proper person executing the change order, because this is the person you're going to have to address at the end of the project as to why the project is cost overrun and late. Additional costs and schedule extensions are identified. Any changes are properly documented. This little change that he wants to change this thing painted, say, yellow from red, that may affect documentation. It may affect training. It may affect a lot of other things in the project that he may not understand or even know about. So those issues need to be fully explored and discussed. We're now into our documentation. As we're building things and modifying things, we need to make sure that we update our project scheduling. Usually scheduling is done weekly, and our project management schedule is updated weekly. We need to track change orders. It depends on the size of the project. You know, sometimes you can have a project where you really only have two, three, four change orders, and sometimes there are 200, 300, 400 change orders. It all depends. And that becomes very important to track the change orders because the change orders affect, generally speaking, the scheduling and the cost.
Do you still keep this as part of a second phase number two, or do you make this into a separate phase, or it all still stays within second phase building and modifying?
It all really stays in building and modifying because there's really nothing to change until you actually start building or
Start
modifying
building, right, got it.
something. And of course, that's after you've got the signed contract that's or signed agreement that says you are authorized to
Right.
do this. Then you want to continue to maintain the proper documentation, such as drawings. And again, you know, our engineer said change this widget to an Exmo or whatever, because there could be, you know, an engineering drawing or whole sets of drawings. You could be changing warranties. You could be changing invoices, executive approvals, and I'm really addressing the whole area of documentation. You need to make sure that you continue maintaining the proper documentation on the meeting minutes. And in project management, this is there's so many documentation items that are critical. When the projects are all said and done, and everybody's wondering why this happened, how this happened, or who did what to whom, the meeting minutes become very critical to document. Well, you know, back 4 months ago at the management meeting held in April, Jim got up and stated that, you know, do, 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 do. And if you've got it all documented, then everything is clear and understanding, and these problems have a tendency to go away then. Sometimes you need to keep a good documentation file on key memos, and of course, emails are very important. That usually constitutes the bulk of the documentation of a project. At this point in time, while you're building and modifying, a lot of times, and again, it depends on specific projects, you may want to begin your user training materials. The whole idea here is as you're building and as you're developing phases of a system that we're putting in or a product that we're building, right then and there is probably the best time to start with the training materials. And our marketing materials, which is the same thing. Because in many cases, as you're building widgets, you know, and the engineers and sometimes the salespeople get involved and they have ideas and concepts. And sometimes you're building a widget for a specific task, but only it comes up that while you're building it, you find there's three other tasks that this widget can be used for. And it's very good right then and there to document for marketing materials and things of that nature.
So in other words, one thing can serve the other
Exactly.
other purpose.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And it's very efficient and easier to document this when the idea occurs because perhaps 2 months or 5 months later when you start to develop marketing materials, you may have forgot about that.
Yeah, very true.
And the marketing materials may include things like, again, depends on the project. But press releases, paper materials, internet web updates. For instance, you might be involved in a new type of billing system, sales system, automated system that is internet-based so that the company's customers can now purchase from a newly acquired division through their existing internet website. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, which I tell you, that is very prevalent nowadays.
You're right. That, you know, again, it depends on the project, and I'm just trying to interject different experiences that I have had along the way here. You also want to conduct frequent progress reports, change reports, involve scheduling and cost reviews. Sometimes a project team needs to sit down with, especially if it's an internal, develop the project with cost accounting department and review perhaps on a monthly basis just exactly where the costs are at, because the internal accounting system may have to project cash flows. That's another key thing, and I don't want to get too detailed in this at this point in time, but in many cases, especially for the larger projects, if you're involved in managing a project and you're burning $50,000 to $100,000 extra a month to do this project, and the company is funding the burden of the payments of this, that could affect the cash flow. If all of a sudden this company has to have an extra $100,000 a month to pay for the payments coming on as a result of this project. So sometimes that enters into it also. Current phase in preparation of the next phase, take a moment and let's review in the building and modifying phase. What we've actually done is started actually working on the project. We now have change orders in effect, where we're doing change orders. We're doing simultaneous documentation. We're updating our project scheduling as we're going. We're taking on change orders. We're maintaining proper documentation as we're going, such as warranties, meeting minutes, things of that nature. And so things are actually going, building, testing, being modified, and work is actually being done during this phase. So now let me move forward to the next phase, since we reviewed that phase. Assuming there's no questions about the actual building and modifying phase of a project.
Questions, anyone? I don't have any. You're really being very, very clear, very detailed.
Well, I have only two.
Allie?
Two.
Yes. Hi, this is Maria from the Town Planner.
Hey, Maria. Welcome.
Thank you. Just in case you lost anyone, because this happened to me a few weeks ago, it's *7 to get back in once you mute.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. I hope everybody heard that. I have not muted the line. Purposely, I left the lines open, but some of them may have muted themselves. So is that what you just did? You went back into *7?
Yes, because I had *6 to mute, and then I couldn't figure out how to get back on, and then somebody told me it's *7.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Do you have any questions for Ken while I have you on the line?
No, I'm pretty much I'm looking at this kind of like adapting it to my business, and I guess a change order would be the same as a revision, but we call them revisions.
That's
so
true.
I'm wondering if I should start calling it a change order. Kind of gives it more like precedence and make people actually sign for it
before
I do the revision.
Oh, absolutely. So,
and
absolutely.
That kind of makes them own it more.
Well, absolutely. A change order, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it on some of the projects, it's just a critical thing. A change order normally starts with a request.
Right.
Where someone actually documents on a piece of paper that they want to change something or add something. A change order can also be an add. We were going to build 6 widgets, now we're going to build 8 widgets. That's a revision that needs to be documented. And then that needs to be turned into the project manager, who then updates it in terms of what impact that request is going to have on the project. Is that going to require additional labor, additional time, scheduling, cost? What impact? Sometimes I may add these 2 new widgets that will negate 3 of the widgets that I thought I was going to build, and now I don't have to build those. This all needs to be worked out, all documented, and then the document needs to go back to whoever is the authority on the project, the executive sponsoring the project, or group of executives, or committee, or whoever, and then that needs to be signed, and so that then they understand that this is a change order to the project, and it is going to have these impacts, and it's going to affect the scope of work, it's going to affect the schedule, the cost, everything. And now you've got it all properly documented, it's all dated, and it's all in one nice, neat package. So there should be no question at the end of the project, you know, as to what happened.
That's awesome, Ken. Yeah, Maria, did that answer your question?
Yes, that really helps. I think instead of calling them revisions, I'm going to call them change order and have people sign them.
Yeah,
before I actually submit it.
I have had change orders sometimes on projects that were so all encompassing. It literally changed the direction of the project.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you're, and I'm just, you know, trying to give you some of my personal experiences. If you happen to be involved in a company and they have, say, different divisions and different locations and things of that nature, and they ask you to develop some new manufacturing process for their ABC division in their Orlando plant, and you're doing that and you've documented that and that's what the project is, and you're on your way of doing that, and everything is looking good, and you're being able to demonstrate some of the new processes, and the executives say, gee, you know, this, I think they got this right, and now wait a minute, if this is so good for the Orlando factory, why don't we put this in six more factories? And so now there's a change order, you're not doing one factory, you're doing six factories. Well, that's a big impact on the project, and that's going to impact costs, scheduling, et cetera, so on, assuming you can even do that because you've got X number of resources committed for a certain period of time and things of that nature. So, you know, all of these different scenarios can come up for the different types of projects, even in the small companies with small projects. All of a sudden, things can drastically change.
That's amazing. It's true. It's totally true. Sometimes we don't realize how things can be affected, and we think it's just, you know, just a minor thing. Well, if we can do one, why not do 10? And we don't look at the consequences, which is something you mentioned at almost at the very beginning when you're doing building and modifying. There are consequences to everything that you do.
There is.
Yep. All right. Any other questions, Maria?
No, that's good. That's really good.
That's an excellent point, and that's something you can apply right away to your business.
Yeah.
Okay, Ken, like I said, our time is getting kind of tight. We can continue or we can reschedule for part two for next Tuesday. It's entirely up to you at this point because you're on a roll. I hate to stop you now.
Well, I'll leave it up to you. I probably only have approximately perhaps 10 more minutes or 15 more minutes.
That would be great then. Then let's just continue. Like I said, I just hate to not do it because it's you're in a roll. You're being very concise. We're getting tremendous amount of value from what you're giving us in here, and I know that there's some people on the line that are listening, and our eyes are being opened in more ways than one. Plus, there's going to be thousands of people that are going to be listening to this recording later on. So you're changing the way we do business, Ken. So let's continue then.
All right, let me continue. The next phase would be the actual implementation. Now we have built or modified our project, and now we need to move into actually implementing it. The very first thing you want to do before you do anything in the implementing phase is to obtain management's permission to implement it. Now, you're assuming that you have gone through all the proper reviews, meetings, testing, backing up, and you feel very comfortable that where you're at in the project, it is ready to be implemented. And, of course, basically, in effect, what you're doing is you're asking your management for their permission to implement it. And the reason this is very important is, again, it depends on the project, but what you may be implementing may have major, major impacts on the company's business. And I have, you know, encountered that on numerous occasions on the projects that I have been involved in, where you know, the project that you're doing is a must-do project. It is a critical project assigned by the company. It must be successful. Therefore, before you actually implement it and change the processes and the way companies do business, that does should require an executive, and so executive signature. And so you obtain the management permits to implement it. Then part of this obviously may involve the user training that we've been talking about. That's very critical. You may want to ensure that whatever it is we're doing, whatever we're implementing, even if we've developed a product that we're selling to the public or anything of that nature, there probably needs to be some form of training involved, salesman training, marketing training, et cetera, so on, field training, manufacturing training, whatever it is, we need to make sure that that training is done and done properly at this point in time. Then the implementation, which we talked about before, depending on the project, may be done in phases. It may be done in parallel phases. It may be done all at once. If it's a brand new system, they never had this before, or it's a brand new product, we just go ahead and implement it, make it available to the public or whatever, depending on what it is we've built or modified. But you could do it in phases. You could do it parallel.
Hello?
Yeah,
hi. State your name and where you're coming from. Can you hear us? Hit star 7. Perhaps that will unmute you. Okay, can you hear us now? Okay, we're going to go ahead and continue.
All right. Continuing with the implementation. Another thing you want to take into consideration and address is document problems. You may, depending on the complex of the project, you may have problems occur during the implementation. You need to document those problems. Some of them may be your as a result of the project team. Some of them may be the result of other things, of people that have left critical things out during the project, things of that nature. And be prepared for very, very rapid fixes. Obtain management's official implementation sign-off. Now that you've implemented whatever it is we're implementing, you need to make sure that you get management sign-off that you, in fact, have done what you have stated you would do up in the early phases and the initial sign-off of the agreement. If you remember, we said we were going to prepare a scope of work. We were going to have some deliverables. We were going to do something. At this point in time is when you need to obtain management's official written implementation sign-off. Whatever it is we said we did, we were going to do, we in fact have done, and we have got it implemented, and it is, you know, done and officially signed off. That pretty much handles the implementation phases of a project. And again, I'm trying to simplify this because this can be a very monumental phase, and it can be a very short phase, depending on just really what the project is all about. Now we're going to move on to the follow-up phase of the project, and that is after we've pre-planned it, we've planned it, we've done our project preparation, we've built it, we've modified it, and now we've got it implemented. Now the next phase, the final phase, is follow-up. And by that, what I simply mean is it may be required to perform some accounting or an interviewing process to verify the improvement. For instance, what I mean by that is if we have a project where we have designed some new business process for the company, they are now doing business some new way, they are using some new automated systems, they are et cetera, so on. They've re-engineered the corporation. You now need to go back and perform some accounting and interview processes that document the success of this, How much money are we now saving as a result of doing it the new way? Are we now increasing our customers? Are we now billing more efficiently? Are we now getting more revenue? Have we obtained more marketing share, et cetera, so on. The next thing you need to take into consideration is to present some follow-up status presentation. After it's implemented, you probably want to go back to the executives and basically give a short presentation about the project, what we did, how we did it, why we did it, the problems we had. In other words, it's sort of a lessons learned review, which may or may not be used for the next time around. There may be a follow-on project to further expand this project or to do something similar, and that's why you want to do that type of a status presentation. The next thing that you may be required to continue to solve additional problems in other areas. I use my example, we're putting in some sort of a manufacturing system at one of the plants. That might have been what the project is about. Now it's successful, it's up, it's implementing, you're proving that it's very productive, that plant is becoming more profitable. Guess what? Now they want you to do it to the remaining six plants in that division. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then there could be also interface requirements, because now they want that plant interfaced into some carpet manufacturing accounting system or things of that nature, which may be the next project phase, for instance. And then the last thing you want to do in terms of follow-up may be to turn over all relevant project files, drawings, schedules, samples, materials, excess inventory. Again, whatever is left of the project needs to be disposed of either back to the corporation or to subcontractors, vendors, or whoever the project needs to be cleaned up. At this point in time, you have pretty much finished your project.
Wow. This is almost the end.
It is the end.
You're almost done, because you never know when they're going to call you back and said, you know, like you said before, hey, this works so well, we want you to duplicate it. We want to do something similar. You know, it's always that kind of a success story. I like a lot what you said, you know, when you do this kind of wrap-up or follow-up presentation, it's not only the success story of the project, but the lessons learned.
Well, and the lessons learned can be positive, they can be negative.
Right, exactly.
And it's important, you know, some company is paying for all of this, some which way, shape, or form, and they pay for a lot of positive results, and they pay for a lot of negative results. So the next time, as a friend of mine would say to me, don't do it. Don't do it that way next time.
Priceless.
Yeah.
Priceless. Ken, this has been awesome. I'd like to, do you have any other thoughts that you would like to leave the audience with? Because it sounds like we have covered everything. We don't, unless the audience wants it, and I will let all of you that have asked me to, for the audio of this particular link, the ones of you who have emailed me directly requesting it, I will let you know. I will put it up to you if you all want to come back next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and perhaps Ken will be kind enough to just give us another wrap-up or another view of what we discussed today. But for now, I think my goodness, I'm out of breath, and I wasn't the one who was talking. So any other questions I ask of the audience? Maria, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Do you have any questions for Ken?
No, not at the moment. He did a really good job covering everything.
Yeah.
Thank
was,
you.
This was pretty awesome. All right, then we are going to wrap it up. If any one of you have any thoughts that you'd like to see this happen again next Tuesday, please let me know by tomorrow. and then we'll just take it from there. On the other flip side of things, I invite you to visit my calendar of events at visionforsuccess.biz, visionforsuccess.biz, B-I-Z, and click on the tab that says calendar of events, and I have two very special series that are coming up, and one is the Power of Five, which is geared to help you save time and money. It's a five-week series, and it's 1 hour per week on every Wednesday, five consecutive Wednesdays. Take a look at it, and there's several series in there, and I want you to take a look at it and let me know what you'd like. There's one in there for you. And I will be seeing you soon. Thank you, everybody. Till very soon. And thank you, Ken. I'll be in touch, all right?
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.